Welcome to the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD or on your favorite podcasting source. I know a lot of people listen via the streaming services that are out there as well. If you're curious where that is, I think we're on iTunes and Omni and I don't know, the regular places people might go and find podcasts. But I make sure that we are on Sermon Audio at sermonaudio.com. You can find the Faith Debate on the Household of Faith in Christ portion of Sermon Audio. Also on Odyssey, that is a platform that's kind of like YouTube or kind of like Rumble. It's not as well known as those, clearly, but it uses blockchain technology for how they manage the inventory. And so even when they want to censor things, it takes them a lot of hard work to do so. So they don't really censor almost anything at all. Like, there are gross things, you know, illegal kinds of things or pornographic things that they will hunt down and take down. But they got to really, really, really work. So they're not just like algorithms knocking you off their platform. So that's why I like Odyssey. Anyway, this is the Faith Debate. I'm Troy Skinner, joined by Daniel Rathby and David Forsey. David's the pastor of a church that meets in a variety of homes, kind of on a rotation basis throughout the tri-state Potomac area. And Daniel Rathby and his father, Imran, they have a church in Thurmont, a house church, and also a ministry they've been involved with for a number of years that helps with family kind of matters, parenting and marriage and relationships, those sorts of things. It's called Conquered by Love Ministries online at conqueredbylove.org. So if you were listening last week, I read into the record, as it were, Article number 33 of the Warrington Declaration, which is talking about medical mandates and government authority and that sort of thing. And it was a long one, but the gist of what they were saying, they're trying to give some space for if a church would require their members to wear a mask because they have a landlord, like they're meeting in a government-owned school building, for instance, or a strip mall or something that they don't own, and the rules of the building, the property owner, are you got to wear a mask to be in this building, then in that case, it's not a sin for the church to say, okay, we got to abide by what the property owners say. I'd be curious to see what we think about that. But at the same time, the church should be busy figuring out some other strategy to
I think what they're really
like
saying
homes or something.
Is not a sin for you as the congregant to say, well, I'm not attending such a church. And the church could tell you, oh, well, you're in violation because the Bible says to meet regularly. You can't say, you're not necessarily in sin because you don't attend the church. But you should be looking for a church that doesn't.
I don't see the attendance part.
That's what it says. In such cases, those who choose not to fellowship because of the mask mandate should not be said to be in violation of any biblical commands regarding regular meeting with the
saints. Further down, but the opening line is, we deny that all instances of requiring masks
right.
for church meetings are necessarily sinful, so that would be on the church, right?
Right?
Or
so either way.
Either way.
And that's pretty open. They're saying, you know, like, there might be times, and you know, if you don't have anywhere else to meet and the place that you meet requires it, maybe that's okay. But then what Daniel is saying further down, you know, but then the church shouldn't discipline people for not coming if they think it's wrong for them to wear a mask.
Right.
And I haven't really thought about it.
For breach of contract with the lease, if you're is requiring this.
And it's always I haven't thought about it, but, I mean, these you start to think about different ways that this could apply. If you have to do what the landlord says, then what about all the renters who are living in apartments or condos of some sort or renting a single-family dwelling? If their landlord says, it's my property, you're going to wear a mask, do they have to listen? I hadn't thought about that question until like this moment, so I don't know that I haven't formulated thought on it. But
well, generally, in American law, you can't... you can't force a tenant to wear or not wear something, for example, in a dwelling. But commercial tenants are a little bit different, and so the church will be a commercial tenant, and you can enforce a lot more than you can enforce of residential. Now, there are other countries, such as Australia, for example, where the government did mandate wearing of masks inside your own home, and they would come into your home to enforce that. But that was the government doing it also, not landlords necessarily. I think there is definitely a difference in... legally speaking, between a dwelling tenant and a commercial tenant.
Also, there might be the issue of a shared space.
Right.
Right. So the landlord is managing multiple groups that use the same space. Can they sort of make rules about the usage of that space that everybody kind of has
and this
to follow?
Would have implications for business owners too, who are renting, you know, shopkeepers who they don't own the space that they're doing business in.
Yep.
So if their landlord
sure.
tells
like
them,
a mall or something.
So the government wouldn't even have to mandate it. Right.
Well, that was ending up happening because the federal government didn't really mandate a whole lot during COVID and never really did for the
or they just offered guidelines.
Yeah.
And then everybody appealed to those guidelines. Well, I'm just doing it because the federal government said.
Yep.
But it's a guideline.
That's how they got around it last time. So I'm not sure that I agree with this whole instance. I guess what they're saying is that let's say such a rule is in place. How do you go about following or not following it, whatever? I think where we're getting at in this conversation is that rule shouldn't be in place. The property managers and landlords shouldn't have the authority to do such a thing because it ends up being de facto government. That's what the DOL tried to use OSHA to cram down the mandates and stuff. But most times, they were just providing guidelines. And then individual businesses, the one thing they did was the public transportation and the FAA for the air travel. But even a lot of that, it was even recommendations, not official mandates. And there was never any federal vaccine mandate. There was never any state-level vaccine mandate. It was all individual churches or schools or colleges or buildings or, you know, those types of things. And each county was doing their own things. And at the state level, they were doing things.
You know, a couple of shows ago, David was making the point that, you know, once you let the horse out of the barn, then logically you're allowed to, you know, do certain things with that horse. Is that language? That's the gist of the thing, right? If A, then B can logically follow it, makes sense. And so I wonder, so the point you were really making, if I remember correctly, David, was, so we got to go back further in the logic chain and get to the root of the issue.
Yeah. And also say, if it is wrong for the horse to run around the yard, maybe it's wrong to let the horse out of the barn in the first place.
Right. And so do we have, is that an issue here? Do churches need to be rethinking how wise is it to put your congregation in a situation where they'll be subject to the whims of a landlord?
To put our gathering under someone else's authority,
right.
As far as
right,
forget masks for anything.
Exactly.
Maybe
yeah.
Maybe there's noise restrictions. You can't be loud. Well, should you be forbidden from singing out at the top of your lungs to worship God? That's another very common restriction in a tenant's landlord setting.
Sure.
Is noise restrictions, right? So I think this kind of gets to the core of why I believe that house churches are the way to go. I don't really think. I'm not a big fan of buildings in general. It's one thing, even if you own the building, I'm not a big fan. But especially if you don't own the building, I'm definitely not a fan of
churches. I think if the church is, I'm not opposed to buildings, but I do think if the church has a building that they're going to use as a multi-purpose facility, like they're going to use it for schooling throughout the week or as some sort of community center to be involved with people's lives or whatever. So it's not just, it sits vacant, you know, 167 hours out of the week. And for 1 hour, you know, it's got 40 people in it. If they've got a building that's more useful, that there could be some wisdom, I think, in that, having good gathering places for people to come together for us to have community and potlucks and whatever. But, other than that, it's all the overhead. And having been in a more traditional church model, you have too, David. I'm sure you remember some of those leadership meetings. It's like a four-hour meeting, and 3.5 of the hours have nothing to do with the spiritual health of the church.
Who's going to be on cleanup duty? Who's going to pay the electric bill next month?
How are we going to come up with the funds to fix the HVAC? Because, you know, a big church building has a big HVAC unit. You know, it's not your typical household unit, which back in the day you could get a new one for like $10,000. I'm not sure where they are now. Back then, you couldn't get a church one for $10,000. Because they were huge, because the churches, the square footage were gigantic. And so you spend all these times worrying about your finances and worrying about, like you said, who's going to coordinate this and coordinate that and what has to do with maintenance of the building, who's going to mow the lawn. That's just a distraction. It's really something the deacons should be doing anyway, not the elders. Right? Because that's why they have deacons.
Right? Acts.
Anyway.
And back to sort of the issue, you know, at hand that they're addressing. And it is very specific. You know, they're talking about a very particular sort of situation here. in the statement. And we're, you know, trying to say, okay, what are the principles in play and that kind of deal. You know, and I mean, I guess the question is, you know, if they're, and they're saying, okay, so a church can't, should not say, because you don't want to wear a mask, if you don't come, you know, you're breaking fellowship. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're saying that the churches shouldn't do that. But I mean, a believer should also take into consideration if a church is requiring you continually to do something that is against your conscience, maybe there ought to be a break of fellowship.
Right.
If the disagreement is so sharp that unity is not possible, mm-hmm. right, then...
And they're not really speaking to whether the landlord should have such a restriction.
Right.
They're saying if it exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there's a bunch of issues all tangled up in this one particular item.
Yeah. When I read it at the end of last week's show, it was like, wow, this has got a lot going on. This will be an interesting one. And we ended up talking about it for like the first 10, 12 minutes of today's episode.
We might be able to get through the last two because there's only three more.
Yeah. We affirm that maintaining personal health and personal health decisions, including decisions about which medical interventions to adopt or forego, are the role and jurisdiction of each individual and their family. It's a family issue or a personal issue or both. But it's not a government issue and it's not a church issue. We've talked about the church one a number of times. They keep bringing that up. They're reinforcing it over and over again, which right. I'm sure is like, you know, pricking Daniel a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think in all cases except specifically what's prescribed, symptomatic, you know, quarantine. But other than that, it should be the family.
I wonder if this is a way to think about that as opposed to, you know, because it's not just a personal health decision at that point. It becomes a community safety issue.
Right.
Right. So it's a different. There's something. You're symptomatic. You're carrying something that's deadly or a serious illness. Like you don't want people getting that. It's not just personal health at that point. So if it crosses the line to being something that's more than personal health, and you could demonstrate somehow prove make the case that. David is a risk to Daniel and Troy. He shouldn't be in the room right now, and I can say so because, and I can point to very specific things, there's a case to be made.
Well, David has a pet tiger who he keeps you know, walking around town with him. You might make the case that the tiger is not sufficiently protected from escaping the leash and mauling somebody, and you could ask David to keep it on the other side of town. You know, maybe
or not bring it into the movie theater. There is a law about that in one city that's still on the books.
About tigers specifically?
I think it might be lions.
Lions?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, the rabbits have
had a bad experience.
And by the way, this is a big gun rights person who's making a distinction here. It's not different than a gun because a tiger can act on its own. The gun can't act on its own. So
that's true.
Yeah, the rabbits have lots of animals. They're like Dr. Doolittle. But I don't think they have tigers and lions.
No. No bears either.
And he likes guns, but I don't think he has a bazooka or a grenade launcher, although I'm not going to put him on the record with that.
I think every American should own bazookas and F-16s with Hellfire missiles.
Hear, hear.
Sounds expensive.
Yeah. Who's got the money for that? That's why they tax you the way that they do, so that you can't afford to buy an F-16.
Right. And an airfield.
All right. So back to medical things. All right. Let's read the next one.
Article 35. We deny that parents are guilty of neglect or abuse if they choose to forego a given medical intervention, such as a medical procedure, or, again, they use the vaccine word. They were inconsistent. They had different writers involved in some of these articles. Yes. Due to the fact that they are not convinced of the short and long-term risk profile or effectiveness of the action. This remains true regardless of what recommendations they have or haven't received from a doctor. So if
they're saying parents are ultimately to be responsible for the care of their children.
And I don't think this prevents parents from becoming guilty of neglect or abuse, and this being one of the factors that's used to determine whether they are, but you can't have a presumption that just because you didn't take a doctor's recommendation, therefore you're abusing your child.
Right.
You can't start with that premise. It could certainly be, you know, you could take a case of malnourishment. Oh, you haven't fed your child in 3 months. You know, the doctors do recommend you feed your child. Well, okay, that's one reason, but also it's obvious to everybody that the child eats food, right? So I don't think they're saying that you can't ever hold parents responsible for abusing and neglecting their children, but I think you can't start with that premise. Now, this, they did not, because they're sticking very closely to their topic, which is COVID, basically, but you can definitely apply this to so-called gender treatments, mutilations, and hormone blockers, and
the logic would play out the same. One thing that they are steering clear of, either they didn't think of it or they just didn't want to go there, but they're saying if a parent says, I'm not going to let my child get that shot or take that medicine or participate in the way the government is saying that they should or whatever, that I can't be. But what about the parents who have their kids get the shot? Could there ever be a case? I'm not talking specifically about the shots that are marketed for the COVID thing.
Right.
Hypothetically, in the future, if there ever were a shot of some sort where they injected a substance of some kind into people and there was some sort of demonstrable harm caused, and it became known.
Take cocaine or heroin, right? Those exist. Those are substances, and parents do sometimes inject those into kids.
So if a kid,
usually they go to jail for doing so.
So can the parents be? But in that case, let's use that. That's an interesting example. So a parent decides that there are medicinal benefits to injecting my child multiple times a year with heroin. And the evidence, the data would seem to indicate otherwise, but they're persuaded, I'm going to go find somebody somewhere who's going to give me the heroin so I can or they can inject my child for me. Could they be charged with abuse? I think the answer is probably yes.
I think you have to be able to prove that the action caused a specific harm, and then you prosecute just like any other criminal action that causes specific harm.
Prosecute for the harm.
For the harm, right. Not for the, yeah. So
what if a parent gave a child, flying in the face of data and evidence, some sort of medical, quote-unquote, treatment, quote-unquote, that caused a brain aneurysm or problem with the kidneys, or inflammation around the heart, something like that.
A direct connection, I think, would have to be demonstrated for there to be a prosecution, right, of the action.
Would reports on something like VAERS be demonstrable evidence, I wonder?
There's another...
used to have cocaine and cough drops and stuff.
Yeah, Coca-Cola apparently used to
have. Another element is, and depending on the case that has to come into play is, was this... Did they do this knowingly? Did they have the evidence? Was it not available to them? Was it not made available to them? Was it impossible for them to know that this would be?
What about parents that send their kids to public school?
They would be held responsible by God for the things that
I've taken us kind of far afield. Let's do the last one here, number 36. We affirm that it is anti-scriptural for a parent to categorically deny all medical interventions to their children at all times, with the rationale that all medical intervention is, as a category, evidence of a lack of faith in God.
There are some sects and some cults that believe that, and I think they're specifically trying to combat those.
Yeah, and like Christian Science, which isn't Christian, but they're famous for. I think Jehovah's Witness is also not Christian. I think they don't do blood transfusions, maybe.
Right, but that's a specific thing. They'll do a lot of other stuff, just never blood transfusions.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to make sure that people don't accuse them of being whack jobs here, and they're like covering a base here.
They're going to accuse them anyway.
Oh, yeah, what are they?
Is this proof text where Paul tells Timothy to take a little wine for his stomach?
Yeah, 1 Timothy chapter 5.
Yep, it is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Baptists love that verse right there.
So this whole thing ends with this. If you are not sure where your local church officers and community stand on these issues, do not be afraid to raise questions in a respectful manner. If you have good, godly leaders, you won't be criticized or dismissed for raising them. If you have been neglected or mistreated by your current local church on these grounds and appeals have not been heard, we encourage you to find a community where medical liberty is understood and practiced. I think
don't
that's
know that
fair.
That needs a whole lot of extra explanation.
I think that's fair. And if you feel like you left your church because, and you haven't made your way back to a church since, because some people, they feel very disaffected, right? The church attendance is down, like big time across the board. And if that's you, And maybe you don't like me, you don't like Daniel, like David, I don't know, you have no taste in people if that's the case. But if you don't, you can still reach out. I've helped people find other churches. You know, it doesn't have to be our church. But if you're looking for a church, you want to know, who can I trust? I will help you figure that out. I desire for you to not neglect gathering together with the saints,
right,
as so many are want to do these days. So I teased this last week. What do you think? You're not on social media, are you, David?
Not really.
No. You're not really either.
I'm not, no.
So this might just be a theoretical question. Do you know what blocking is? I don't want to take anything for granted. If somebody, you know, comments on your stuff or tries to hijack things or is very offensive or whatever, you can actually block them so you don't see their stuff, they can't see your stuff.
Not on Twitter anymore.
Okay, well, but
they just removed that ability.
Is that right? Okay, well, you can on, yeah, see, that's how cool they pay attention to these things. Because I've blocked two people ever. In one case, it was because the person kept insisting on hijacking I don't care what the post was about. It could be about what we've been talking about on the show the last number of weeks. And he would put a comment in there about the earth being flat and stir up people. And the whole thread of conversation would then be about flat earthism. And I said to him, and he was, you know, kind of not a friend, but friendly. I knew him personally. It wasn't just a social media contact. And I reached out and I said, dude, you got to stop. Stop. If you want to talk about flat earth, fine. Do it on your page. Don't be hijacking every single post. And he refused. So I blocked him. And then there was somebody else who got rather kind of a jerk in my view, but not, I mean, towards me, but whatever, I can handle that, but was very jerky towards other people who were commenting under the post, you know, people who are Facebook friends or Twitter followers of mine or whatever, right. And give them a heart. I said, you know what? And I reached out to that person too. Used to work with him once upon a time. And I said, look, if you're going to keep badgering people and being that disrespectful and that foul with people, then you're not welcome on my page anymore. So this is your last warning. And he didn't change, so I blocked him. Those are the only two people in all my years on social media that I blocked. But somebody asked the question if it's a sin to block someone, and I'm not sure why they think it would be.
So I have a verse that goes with that.
Okay.
While you're talking, Proverbs 26. It's got two seemingly contradictory verses in a row. I'll read them both. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. Next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. And then he goes on and says, he that sendeth a message by the hand of a fool cutteth off the feet and drinketh damage. So, I think there are times to deal with fools by talking with them, and there are times to deal with fools by cutting them off and not talking with them. And you should be using the guiding of the Spirit and discernment to know when those times are now. But they both times exist. It's not a contradiction to both answer and answer not a fool. And I think that's what I would say to that.
Yeah, I think we're on the same. I wasn't sure where he was coming from.
I think in some ways you're responsible for what goes on
like on your page.
On your own page, on your feed, you know, within the comments.
As much as the platforms allow you. Some of them don't allow you much policing power.
Yeah.
But.
And so, you know, if something not good is happening there, it is okay for you to stop that, and maybe it's your responsibility to stop that.
Well, I mean, think of it. Forget social media. I mean, if you and I and David, and we all go out to a restaurant together, and we meet a whole bunch of other friends, and one friend is just kind of being a jerk. I mean, we might just choose to go out somewhere else next time and
not invite them.
Right. You can do that. It's not. It's kind of.
And there are other things too that different platforms allow you to snooze someone for 30 days, meaning that, you know, you're just going to take a break from seeing their stuff for a while. You can mute someone where you're not blocking them, but they're not going to be. You're not going to see their stuff. I'm not sure if they can post on your stuff. I don't know. And there's other times you can just informally, like, you know, if somebody is just, you don't feel like they're playing the game straight, you just stop interacting with them. You don't block them. They can still come and do what they want. You're just like, you know, I don't have time for what feels like nonsense. Whether it's nonsense or not, you know, you could be wrong in making that determination. But anyway, all right. Well, thank you for helping me answer that question. One of our listeners asked that question, so we gave him a group answer. Daniel Rasby, he went to the Bible. That's his habit. He gave us a biblical answer on that. That's good. David Forsey was glad that we went to the Bible. That's his way as well. I'm Troy Skinner, and I'm glad you listened to the show. Till next week, 167 and a half hours. Turned up my mic too soon. God bless.